Hello and welcome to episode 57 of WB40, the weekly podcast with me, Matt Ballantyne, and Chris Weston. Well, here we are again. Welcome back, Mr. Weston. It's been a while. Are you well?
I'm very well. It's been, we've had a couple of weeks off, haven't we? I was on holiday and then I was out and about meeting the troops in another part of the world. So, yes, it does seem like a little while since we were together.
Yeah, so you've missed the entire Siberian winter. Which happened whilst you're away. It's very convenient that for you.
It did. I refused to believe it was as bad as everybody said. Frankly, when I went away, it was okay, and when I got back, it was okay. All a lot of fuss over nothing, I'm sure.
Yeah, no, absolutely. As we had snapshots of you by the pool, it was nice of you to be able to, you know, send emotional support for us as we battled through torrential snowdrifts or whatever it was. You know, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Trying to think what else you might have missed whilst you were away. I think it's pretty much countries rambling on as normal. We're going to talk a bit more about your travels, the second week of your travels anyway, later in the show. Anything you missed while you were away?
What do you mean, anything I pined for?
Yeah.
And I have to say, no, not really. It was just a really busy week. It was one, I didn't really have a chance to miss anything or think about anything. It was because you're in a time zone where the UK is asleep for the first few hours of your day. It means that by the time you've cracked on and you've got halfway through, then suddenly people start asking you things. They don't stop asking you things until you go to bed about midnight. So. It was pretty hectic, and of course the nature of the world these days is the world is a lot smaller than it used to be, isn't it? So you can talk to your family, and it's the future, isn't it? You can go on your tablet, and hey presto, they're there. So you don't lose contact with people as you might have done a few years ago when you went away. It might be a good thing or a bad thing, depending on your point of view. But the world we're in now is it's just infinitely more connected, isn't it? Once upon a time, if you went away for work for a week, that was all. That's all you'd ever do. You wouldn't even call people because of the expense and effort to try and set up a call from one part of the world to another. Whereas now it's ubiquitous.
To click away, it's really quite hard work to be able to get to really disconnect. I think these days, North Wales. Because of physics, I think I might have mentioned this before, but Snowdonia, there's a good place to go if you don't want to have any contact with anybody. You don't really... When we travel, we're travelling with everything. There's an observation today, actually, sort of slightly related to this. I suddenly realised Office 365, which is a product I'm learning to put up with, and I've realised that how terrible a message the name of that product is sending. It is basically saying 365 days of the year, you will be virtually in the office. You cannot escape. You will never, ever allow its tendrils to be able to leave you. This is everything. There is no work-life balance anymore. There
office
is no escape.
Existence.
Yeah, exactly. Office everywhere. I'm sure that will be a brand. So anyway, on that bleak and dysfunctional note, let's press on with the show.
So one thing I have, of course, missed is the weekly feature that we've been running, this yin and yang of the internet. And after last week, when I went on a bit of a chunter about somebody and their failing to prepare for redundancy, if you remember, something that Mark Chillingworth mentioned on Twitter the other day, he was enjoying. So hopefully this will be just as good, I think. I've seen your selections, Matt, and you've got a pretty dismal yin, haven't you, from the week when we had the Beast from the East?
Yes, I actually tweeted a screenshot of this from, it was one of the rail company's websites on Thursday last week when we were in the kind of, oh, let's just cancel everything kind of stage of the great snowdrift of 2018. And they basically just, if you went to find rail information about what was going on, the sign up was basically saying, please call National Rail Inquiries on 0845. In 2018, for a critical infrastructure service like that to not be able to support when quite a lot of people want to be able to look at the website for information, and then to revert to telephone is just unacceptable. And it's noticeable, actually, that it does seem to be that whenever there's any sort of load on any of the particular bits of the rail network that I use, it's not that uncommon. If you go to the apps and to the websites, you find that the train operator's site either isn't working or has got a note up like that to be able to say, go somewhere else, we can't help you at this time. Indicator boards going down, all this kind of stuff. And the indicator boards seem reasonably reliable, but it shouldn't be on the wit of rail companies to be able to run some sort of cloud-based API service so that they can get this stuff working when it's really necessary. But apparently it is.
Yeah, that is quite bizarre, really, because you're talking about a time when the most people are going to be looking for the information. So it's like some sort of demented reverse channel shift where you're going to try and funnel them all to the most bottlenecked way of doing it is by each individually talking to a person.
Yeah, no, it's like, and you can be sure that the first thing that the rail thing, if you phone it up, will say is, have you checked our website? Because you know that they won't have updated that. And generally, in business terms, they'll be wanting people to go the other route because it's cheaper. It's just madness, infuriating. And I think it's actually one of those things that it is a sign about how much our expectation of being able to get access to information has now been set. And this isn't a thing that we can then pull back from. It's not a thing that service providers, retailers, whoever else, they can't stop providing information now because we just expect it there. And it's just so inherent to the delivery of effective services to be able to be transparent, to be able to deliver information about how the service is going. Not being able to do it at times of you know, major interruption is really, really not good. And there's some, I mean, almost certainly what you've got then is a layer of politics that are revolving around train operating companies, the national rail infrastructure, and all the rest of the nightmare that is our semi-privatized rail system. But just please, this stuff needs sorting.
Well, we had I was talking to a colleague of mine today, obviously everybody telling me about their woes, given that I didn't have to suffer it. And then somebody talking about being in London, and apparently Chris Grayling was in King's Cross, very close to where I'm working at the moment, and talking about, you know, trying to excuse the fact that actually, even despite there being a good 2 weeks of warning of this, you know, the Met Office were telling us about this for a long time. This is no freak occurrence that came out of nowhere. That Mr. Grayling was there trying to tell everybody that, well, you know, sometimes these things happen. And what can you say? Mr. Grayling has been an utter failure and worse than negligent in all of his government jobs ever. But he's still getting jobs. And this is he's a bit of a Brexiteer, isn't he, old Grayling? And this kind of, well, it'll all sort itself out. Well, you know, the details will sort themselves out when these things happen. Seems to be a constant mantra from them. So, yes, what can I say?
I think the other thing, though, that was interesting whilst all this was going on, I actually worked from home 3 days last week. And where I work, if I've got meetings, or particularly if I'm running workshops, being in the presence of other people physically is usually quite important. If it's more procedural meetings or catch-ups or whatever else, there's no reason why I need to be in the same physical space, especially if it's going to have a risk of taking me 2 hours to commute when it usually takes an hour. What's the point in wasting all that time? But the kind of media coverage, the chat about home working and how it's still... working from home is something said in inverted commas because it means skiving off, I find fascinating. You know, my wife's been working from home full time now for a decade, and you know, that's just her work method now. I work at home when I can and when it makes sense to. I don't do it on a regular basis. I do it on when I, you know, have opportunity to, because the nature of the work would be better to be done at home. And or I've got other commitments, so it means that it is easier for me to not have to commute. And or there's some madness going on in the rail network, which means what's the point? But we're still quite a long way from this idea of working from home being taken seriously in the mainstream. And even on occasions like when the networks are collapsing, the rail networks are collapsing, people are still going, oh, working from home, are we? In a accusatory kind of way. I find that fascinating, and it's, I think, a long way to go before people take this stuff seriously.
Yes, and to their cost, because trying to drag people in, especially into a place like London when the railway stopped working, you get no work out of people because they're trying to travel all the time. And then you could lose them for even longer because they end up getting injured and falling over in the street. There just seems to be it's a strange mindset.
And maybe we're actually in some of the big American tech companies who've sort of reneged on the whole flexible working thing. Yahoo is the one that particularly sticks out. There's a few others though. There seems to be this backlash about the idea of flexibility of where we work. And when that comes from tech companies, you think there's something going very odd at the moment.
Well, no, it's a failure of management, isn't it? At the end of the day, if people are going to skive off, they'll skive off anywhere, and they'll spend it sitting on the toilet playing Candy Crush or doing the crossword. It's the idea that you are going to manage people by what they're doing, you know, in terms of where they happen to be. It seems to me a very Victorian idea, but some people are very wedded to those sort of practices.
This is true. I've got a rough rule of thumb, though. If you need a uniform, you probably need to be at work. There you go.
Profound.
Mm.
So anyway, we've talked about the grimness of the weather and your yin, but you have a more uplifting yang, don't you?
Yes. Something that was in this most recent week's Imperica newsletter, which is fabulous. I'll put a link to it on the website. It's well worth a look each week. And it's a thing called 6 degrees of Wikipedia, and it's a silly toy, and I love silly toys like this, because what it enables you to do is to be able to enter two things and to be able to get the machine to be able to plot the shortest route by Wikipedia items between those two things. So you can basically plot out the degrees of separation between any concepts in the world at all. I have to say I have really struggled because I've not been able to find anything more than 2 degrees of separation away. And probably more than anything is a reflection. If you try to think of two completely unrelated things, then they'll probably have a level of relation to them anyway. I think you've managed 4, which I was very impressed by. Challenge to the listenership, if anybody can get something that's 5 degrees of separation away on 6 degrees of Wikipedia, there won't be a prize, there'll just be bragging rights. So there you go. But it's a lot of fun, and it's a very interesting way to be able to see how really weird stuff links together. So there you go.
It's a bit like there was a thing, Google Whack, wasn't there, a few years ago?
The Dave Gorman book about Google Whacking. Yeah, next to impossible to do these days.
That's right, yeah. I can't quite, was it? What was it you had to find?
It was to be able to do a...
two words.
It was two words that you would search, and it would give you one unique answer. And it all started because for a short while Dave Gorman were two words that you put into Google and only one answer came back. Shows you how long ago the book was written now. And he then went on this adventure of trying to be able to find Google Wax. And it was excellent stuff from those early headed days of the internet. So last week you were in India. And one of your clients you're working for, you were doing some work with some of their offshore technology folk out in Pune. I thought it'd be an interesting time just to be able to just take stock a bit about where the outsourcing, offshoring, nearshoring kind of world is at the moment. Because it seems to have been around for, certainly my first experiences of offshoring stuff to India were probably 20 years ago now. And whilst the technology to enable people to work remotely has changed, there's also been this weird conflicting thing, which is as the rise of agile methods in particular have come along, there seems to be more and more focus for many on bringing development teams physically to the same place to be able to work, to be able to be effective. And there's a whole debate about whether that's true or not. But just to get some reflections and some thinking about where it's at the moment and where things might be heading. Tell us a bit about what you were up to, obviously within the context of your client confidentiality and all, but what sorts of technology folk were you out to sea?
So the guys I was out to see this week were essentially it's a Java development shop working on some products used by various organisations and people in the UK government involved with offender management and things like that. So quite a niche area, I guess. But really, it's interesting, but it's not necessarily relevant in terms of the way that they do their work, other than the fact there's a bit of a constraint around data. You know, we're using test data sets and things which are not relevant to the live data. It's the same challenge, really. And those guys are out in India, so it's about a 5.5 hour difference. They're ahead. So really, I went out to just meet them, really, find out how they were working, what particular challenges they were having, how, you know, we could help them to improve what they were doing or help them to get a better grip on requirements and things like that. So the whole, it doesn't matter where you are, whether you're a team in the UK or a team offshore, the fact is that, as you say, agile is a thing now that everybody wants to do. So, and if you're going to do agile, then it's the same as if you're doing waterfall or anything else. You need good requirements to work to. The difference with agile, of course, is that you're getting them on a you're kind of spoon fed. But the key is that they need to be good quality, and they need to be achievable. They need to be ready to work on in that agile sense, defining what is something that's ready to work on. And that whole process, it is stretched, definitely, when you've got people in different physical locations, because conversations that you have are about a particular requirement or a process or a driver for the way something is done, they are always better done face to face. I think that's the ultimate in terms of the way requirements are transmitted. But then you can have a very good business analyst who can gather requirements, really elicit good requirements, and send them across in a way that's very, 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 very contextually useful to a development team that they've got to know. And you can have people in the same room who aren't very good at gathering requirements and aren't very good at articulating what they want, and you can have it done badly in one building. So it's not it doesn't follow that everything has to be good if it's close together and worse if it's far apart. It's just it just does present more challenges.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the whole question about different methods and approaches to software development, I'm firmly of the view that the right team will be able to deliver despite the method, and a good method won't make a bad team necessarily deliver. And yeah, I think absolutely. Issues around there's probably something about proximity in terms of being able to build trust with people, a very sort of quite low level psychological stuff about do you understand the people that you are working with, and part of that comes from just being around them, being able to see how they are, body language, all the rest of it. And if teams don't get the chance to be able to have at least some point be able to get to see and know each other a little bit, it can be much, much harder to be able to build those levels of trust. I think the time difference thing is really interesting, actually, because I think time difference makes more of an impact than physical distance. And actually, when you haven't got the same amount of time in the day, in the working day, when you're both working together, I think that can be much more problematic than the fact that somebody's, you know, if you look at development teams that are based in South Africa, one of the big selling points that they have is they've got nearly exactly the same time zone, same for Eastern European teams as well. But there is this, I don't know, I think there's this pressure now for people to be able to, if you're particularly working on agile type projects, where it's all about, you know, bringing in people from multiple disciplines and how they're brought together, unless you can bundle up very specific sets of stuff in a way that is fairly unambiguous and package it up in that kind of way, it's still difficult if you don't have the people actually physically there with you. What sort of technology are they using to be able to work with the teams back in the UK? Because that must have, 20 years, that must have changed a fair amount.
Yeah, absolutely. The availability of decent video conferencing, or, well, I say decent, I guess. I mean, what I mean is cheap and easily set up. I think that's made a massive difference. I think it's made it far more possible. I mean, we use Skype to talk to that team, and it's fine. I've worked with offshore teams before where we've used Hangouts. And I think also what that does is, I mean, I know I take your point about again with time difference, and time difference is a challenge, but you can make it work to your advantage sometimes. So if you've got so I've worked with teams in Eastern Europe as well, so maybe a couple of hours away. And sometimes with those guys, if you have something going on in the UK a little bit later on when those guys have packed in, it means that if before you have your stand-up meeting the next morning, they can come in, they can pick up any sort of niggles that have gone on, they can be working on it. So by the time you actually get everybody gets around to have a stand-up, then some of those things have been knocked on the head and you haven't got to talk about them. They're nice and easy to get resolved. And I think even with the Indian time difference as well, you are able to work in more, you get more hours out of the day because of the way you're spread out. Yeah, okay, you do get those issues about people not being available sometimes, but I do think that there can be some positives to it as well. It's about how you work together and how you ensure that your communications are consistent. And I also think it's a really important just meeting people, making sure. I think trying to offshore to teams and commoditize development is a really bad idea if all you're doing is throwing stuff over the wall and expecting software back. You really have to get people together at some point so they get to meet each other, understand each other, and know what they're each other working to. And that means that whenever you go into an offshoring relationship, you've got a building cost for quite a lot of travel. And if it's in India, then that's quite a long way away, and you know, it takes you quite a long time to turn that round. As you get a bit closer into the Eastern Europe, etc., then it gets a little less problematic. But if you're all you're doing is speaking to a bunch of names and roles, I think you are setting yourself up for a fall.
You talked about stand-up meetings. One of the things I've noticed in a few clients that I've worked, those stand-up meetings, the point of standing up was to keep them brief and to keep people focused. And then you have some sort of board usually that people are looking at, so a Kanban board or something up in physically a whiteboard. And then you have somebody or a few people not actually in the same physical space. And then just the practicality of running that kind of meeting. Video conferencing works really well one-to-one. I think now we're kind of at a point where things like FaceTime and Skype have made video, you know, two people talking on video really work quite well. It works reasonably well in very structured meeting rooms. It's a complete nightmare if you're standing around in a corner of an open plan office. And yet that's part of the whole point of those kind of formats of meetings, was to make them not procedural. It was to make them about the stuff and have physical artifacts to talk about and to stand up to make sure you don't waffle on.
Well, I agree, but I mean, I think an agile stand-up is fairly procedural. It has got a structure to it that, you know, people have got their time to talk, and it's not a free-for-all. So but you're right, if you've got a bunch of people in one corner of an office in one part of the world and another bunch in another, then it is different. But you just have to get your process right. And then you've got your Trello boards or your Jira or whatever it is that you're using to monitor your progress to work to. I think it is different, but you kind of have to work around it. And if you get into a routine, you get into a rhythm and people know the tools, then I think it can work. But it's you're right. I mean, it's not a simple kind of, well, how much am I paying my developers? £400 a day. Oh, look, I can get up to £200 a day over there. Therefore, I have saved £200 a day. That's just not how it works.
No, and I guess that's the thing, isn't it? That this started as, I think, primarily a cost-driven thing. And as those markets where offshore development has built over the last two decades, whilst I'm certain cost is still a large factor in this, as much as anything, it's about availability of resource, I'd have thought, now, than it is about the cost of resource. And if we look forward, if we get into a world where the willingness for people to come to the UK for whatever reason is diminished, then actually that might become even more of a driver for people using nearshore and offshore talent, because they want just to be able to get resource, and that doesn't exist in the local market.
I think that's a real impact of the fact that we could be losing the ability for people to come and work in a flexible way. And I think those people who can show that they have teams that are able and capable of augmenting an onshore team and have those processes in place, because they're not just standard agile development processes. There's a whole bunch of hygiene and process around being that offshore team, that team that is separated by distance and separated by time and sometimes separated by language and culture. There are extra things you have to put in place. So one of the companies I work with, part of what they've done is they've successfully integrated an offshore team into what they do, into their development process. So one of the things they do is they provide business analysts, project managers and things like that for customers on a contract basis. So what they can now do is offer that kind of wrap around a offshore team to say, yeah, you could go and just engage with an offshore team, and go and get a whole bunch of prices of developers per day or whatever and go and ask them to develop your application. But we have already done that. We've set up the structures, we've got the conversations, we know how to work with these guys, we've got we know where they're strong, we know where they need help. And we are here in the UK. So why don't you work with us? We will run the project for you. We will help you gather your requirements, and we will essentially maximize what you'll get out of your offshore team. So okay, yeah, you're gonna pay more than you think you're gonna pay if you go and just engage your team. But you're probably gonna get more out of that team. You're probably gonna need less time, and you're probably gonna get things wrong less. So I think there's a opportunity for those companies who can provide that wraparound the tech talent that's out, in the far flung countries.
And you've had quite a bit of experience in the last few years of both Eastern Europe and also development out in India. What are the differences, do you think?
I think the differences are, I think in India, you are necessarily a little bit further away, so you've got that bigger, time difference. And culturally, I think it's a different mindset. So again, you're probably closer to the European mindset in terms of the way that people interact with you if you're in Eastern Europe, and therefore you need less translation in that sense. But having said that, the Indian outsource world is probably more mature, in as much as there are, you go to Bangalore or Pune or whatever it might be, there are thousands of people working in companies from Infosys to Capgemini and IBM and all of these guys. So there are more generations of people who are working in those places, and also there are more people who have worked in those places, got placements in the UK, worked in the UK and gone back. So I think there's some of those differences are now blurring slightly. But I think it depends on the kind of company you are, and depends on the type of experience you've got in software development. That's what would push me to looking at certain types of company in different areas, rather than just these guys are cheaper over here, or those guys are whatever it might be. I think it is quite a complex, quite a nuanced decision when you're looking at an offshore development team. If you try and boil it down to dollars per day, then you're essentially dead in the water.
Well, there we go. Another week. It's good to have you back. Nice to know that you had an interesting and useful time, and a nice holiday before that.
It's good to be back, Matt. It's good to be back in harness.
Yeah. So, but what does the week of proper work have ahead of you?
Oh, good Lord. Well, it started already. So today was pretty today was pretty good. Real catch up with various clients, and then tomorrow it looks like I'm going to be in London and catching up with the guys who I went to India with, and putting in some of the things in place that we took back from that trip, some of the changes that the team were looking for, and all positive really. How about yourself?
I am but aside from client work, which the continuing collaboration stuff is going on, which is I've been putting some stuff on the blog for some of the stuff that's been coming out of that. There's some interesting things I think emerging from that, but I need to find some time this week before next week when we've got the second stage of judging for this year's CIO 100 from CIO.co.uk. Which we had the first session whilst you were away, which was a bit of a mixed bag this year, but good to see the other judges on the panel, and there's some interesting stuff in there which I need to get into a bit more detail on, which would be fun. And other than that, surviving being a lone parent again this week as my wife jets off to Boston, and that's Massachusetts rather than Lincoln.
You're a martyr to the cause. What can I say? You know, I hope your wife appreciates the hard work you put in.
As the children run feral around me, yes. Terribly hard work. So there we
Pot noodle is a perfectly acceptable, nutritious lunch. Don't worry about it.
I'll have you know, I handmade soup for dinner for the boys this evening, because I am that kind of person. There we go. Anyway,
well done.
On that Epicurean bombshell, that's it for another week. We'll be back next week. We've got some interesting guests coming up over the next few weeks, and I'm working on a few others as well. Have a good week.
And remember, you can catch us on our website at wb40podcast.com. You can talk to us on Twitter at wb40podcast. And of course, these days, you can also catch us on our WhatsApp group. And the link for that is on our website. So do catch us there.